and welcome to OMFIF podcast, a weekly discussion on key trends in the investment and economic policy from some world's leading commentators. This is Giulia De Medoro from London, and two industry experts have joined me today, Antonella Napolitano, head of investor relations at Deerpath Capital, and Gabriella Kindert, head of alternative credit and investment partners, and a member of the supervisory board at Mizuho Europe. Thank you for joining us today. As per introduction, when I started my career in private equity, private debt wasn't an asset class by definition in most of the LP community. It was seen as a more of a subset of a private equity. It has since become a defined term across many institutions and accepted as a credible source of finance and a standalone asset class. A few years ago, this wasn't the case. Investors are yield-starved with a traditional fixed income products. And when we look at the private debt space, opportunity is massive in comparison to what it was 15 years ago. And subsequently, we have seen more competition in the market. Characteristics of the private debt credit are different than for a private markets portfolio. And of course, very different to your private equity exposure in terms of the consistent cash yields, attractive decorrelated returns, and perhaps even flexibility to structure loans that suit the specific needs of the borrowers. Lower risk if you are investing in a more senior part of the capital structures, and probably the most important is a short duration. And all of this is fueling the demand for private debt, putting growth into perspective. US is a more turbulent economically, yet $150 billion worth of deals are at the point of origination. And there's a lot of white space in the US and the UK. And maybe I can give a word to you. Could you please tell us a bit about yourselves?
Sure. My name is Antonella Napolitano. I work at Deerpath Capital. I am head of investor relations and business development. And what Deerpath does is we are a direct lending manager in the U.S., and we're focused on making first lien investments to companies owned by private equity sponsors in the lower end of the middle market in the U.S. And the lower end of the middle market is defined as 5 million upwards of 15 million of EBITDA.
Excellent. Gabriella, the word goes to you.
Yes, good afternoon, everybody. My name is Gabriella Kindert. I'm actually calling in from Amsterdam, and I have spent the last 25 years in private markets, gained experience in banking and asset management, managing global portfolios in different asset classes, leverage loans, CRE, private debt, infrastructure debt, mortgages. And I have recently finished my PhD on alternative lending platforms. Currently, I am a supervisory board member at Mizuho Bank. I'm advising a number of direct lending private debt platforms in Europe, how to commercialize their strategies. And I'm also an expert to the European Commission on fintech-related alternative lending projects. So this is what I'm doing currently.
Excellent. Fantastic. Thank you so much. And I will begin with my first question. What have been the effects of intensified competition in the private debt market? Which areas in the market are overly crowded with fewer opportunities? And is it becoming too busy? And if so, what can fund managers do to distinguish themselves from their competitors to attract institutional lenders?
I think that there have been so many players, particularly in the U.S., entering the direct lending market, and it's becoming very crowded. I think investors are becoming worried about what's going on in the market because of the overcrowding, which is producing a lot of competition here. And just to kind of step back quickly, in the U.S., which is really the market I could speak to, there's basically three segments of the middle market. So lower middle market, as I said, is where we focus, 5 to 15 of EBITDA. Then there's the what we call more of the core traditional middle market. That's 15 million up to 75 million of EBITDA companies. And then there's the big end of the upper middle market, which is like the leverage finance department of a big investment bank that is very far away from our space. The second segment that I mentioned, which is called more of like a core or traditional middle market, that's the market that's being flooded with new managers and a lot of capital. And what's happening there is because of the numbers of players in that space, that market is becoming extremely competitive. And because of this, you're seeing compressed yields and a major relaxation of investment discipline to win deals and also gain yield. So you're seeing leverage levels at 6 times or more. You're seeing covenant-light deals. You're seeing a lot of EBITDA add-backs. And then in order to gain additional yield, you're seeing more of these like senior stretch, second lien, some mezz. A lot of terminology is now in the market that is new. Like a lot of this senior stretch, unitranche, that did not exist many years ago. And that's why, you know, being focused on the lower middle market is so important to us. Our yields are higher, our leverage levels are lower. We're able to invest in first lien, first position debt and still get pretty good yields of around 10% unlevered. We have a full set of covenants in all of our deals, which is very important when it comes to protecting your capital or your principal when a company underperforms. And we have board observer seats on all of our deals as well. And the last comment I'll make is that regardless of where you sit in one of these buckets in the middle market, everyone needs to be differentiated. Even us in our lower middle market, we might be the biggest institutional player, but we have competition on every deal as well. Everyone needs to differentiate themselves. And in this market, you can't differentiate just on track record, because let's be honest, everyone has a good track record. I mean, we've been investing a decade in a benign, healthy economy. If you don't have a good track record, it would be surprising that you're in business today, because you're certainly not going to have one when there's a downturn. So I think that differentiated in terms of where you sit in the market, so we're in the lower middle market, what kind of yields you're producing, what kind of strategy is it? Pure play direct lending, is it distress? Is it some esoteric type of strategy? Type of security, are you doing first lien? Are you doing a senior stretch? Are you doing mezz? The other big thing I think on differentiation is what you're doing to protect your loans now and in the future. Do you have the expertise on your team to deal with a workout situation when a company underperforms?
Sure, we'll come back to unitranche and the track record a bit later. But yeah. Gabriela, do you have anything to add?
Oh, yes, of course. How much time do I have? You know, in addition to the complexity of the different asset classes that you described, all the different dynamics like the leverage market, mid-market, lower mid-market, tech-driven market, and so on and so on, add the complexity of different European regions. We have a very heterogeneous market in Europe with very different stage of development and very different upside potential. Let me just give you some statistics to illustrate this, how differentiating this market is. So the balance sheet of the banks, which basically represents still the majority of lending, has declined in corporate lending from 4.9 to 4.4 trillion. However, there are significant differences between countries. For example, in Spain, Italy, we still haven't reached the pre-crisis level. Meanwhile, in other countries like Belgium or France or Germany or the Netherlands, we are well above. And this also determines the dynamic of alternative investment opportunities for different lenders. But if you look at the big picture, what has happened in the last 10 years? We have seen an increase, a massive increase of company debt issuance held by euro area investment funds for 18 to 28%, which means that we are clearly seeing a major shift from bank-driven lending to institutional investor and private wealth-driven lending. So the lending gap is very heterogeneous. The opportunities are very heterogeneous. And what I see are two gaps is basically the lending gap, which is very heterogeneous, as I mentioned, and also expectations gaps. So a lot of areas are overcrowded, and investors unfortunately expect to have a high return, to receive a very high return, like 6 to 8% on their investment return. But if I look at the majority of the needs of corporates in Europe are actually below this level. You know, corporate cost of borrowings overall in the balance sheet of banks went down from 6% to 1.6%. But investors' expectations still remained the same. And what I see is that because of the supply demand and different expectations in certain areas, GPs have no other choice than provide this return. which means that they have to go down the credit curve and they have to relax certain standards because they need to provide this level of return. So again, very different asset classes have very different dynamics, and many of the criticisms that we see in on direct lending or on leveraged loans are not applicable on certain areas. So there are a lot of opportunities here.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Talking about the relaxing the standards, did the increasing competition change the fund structure, or fund managers still using the closed-end structures?
I mean, in Europe, I clearly see a relaxation of this, especially in leveraged loans. You know, like 10 years ago, it was not unprecedented to see semi-open structure in leveraged loans, and I increasingly see open-ended structures, I must say. That's something that's
great. And I would second that here in the U.S., and there's been a lot of activity in the BDC space, and it's something that we've looked into as well because it is a great structure, actually, particularly for investors outside of the U.S. It solves a lot of problems like ECI and all of that. And from a manager perspective, it's nice because you have permanent capital, but I think from the investor's perspective, to be able to have better liquidity for certain investors that don't want that longer lockup, it does give them more options. But we're seeing that trend here in the U.S. as well.
Obviously, we have seen institutional investors, struggling to find assets and returns to balance their liabilities. And private debt has a number of advantages. It helps reduce the concentration of fixed income portfolios, mitigating the credit risks and risks that are linked to the interest rates. Asset diversification, and probably the third one, it obviously enables investors to gain exposure to infrastructure and real estate debt. And private debt has become a staple of any portfolio. At the moment, I think it's too big to ignore. In addition to what I mentioned above, how does private debt meet investors' needs?
I think the most important element you already mentioned, I think the most important is the cash yield. In comparison with private equity, you have immediate cash yield advantage. And investors actually need private markets to obtain their target returns. So they cannot ignore this asset class. If I look at private debt and compare the public debt and private debt performance, the private debt has significantly outperformed public debt. So we have 3.5-4% outperformance. So it cannot be ignored. And this cash yield is a tremendous advantage. And, I can mention many other examples, like, the dry powder of private markets, increasing the importance of private markets allows massive opportunities in the investable universe. And if you put this in the context of increasing public entities, obviously this market cannot be ignored.
I would, just add to that. I completely, completely agree, especially on overall, if you look at like a decade or even more in returns, the private market does outperform the public fixed income market. And there's so many advantages to what you could do being on the private side. You just have information, much more access to information, both in the due diligence process as well as ongoing access to company management. You have much more control over voting rights if there is an issue, whereas in a public market, you just have a lot less rights being invested in the public market. And then the manager has so much better access, which is why a lot of times in the private market, you could get deals done at superior terms and with better protections in place. So on the investor side, it's not an asset class for every investor. I think, investors that are only looking into what they call high octane type strategies and they want to produce a 20, 25 or 30% return, this is not the asset class for you. I think from a diversification perspective, everyone should have it. But there's some investors who don't want the income coming in and they want to be out. They want to be in a private equity fund and they're fine having their money held up for a number of years before getting any capital return. So it really depends on your risk appetite and what you're looking for in terms of your financial goals. But for those who are looking for steady income and safety, this is the asset class to access.
Sure, we will come back to investors and the appetite in a little while. Question would be, what are the latest trends in terms of strategies for the private debt funds? And perhaps you could discuss the strategies that have been providing the better returns.
I do believe that a lot of investors see that we are, or consider that we are late in the cycle. They see that in certain strategies, risk parameters to lose and supply and demand basically is not in balance. So what I feel the right approach is actually to go to less crowded markets, and there are plenty of opportunities. As I mentioned already in my introduction, in some regions like the Central and Eastern Europe, Italy, Spain, Portugal, we are still able to receive very good risk-adjusted return. And venture debt is also another area where I see very interesting opportunities. And naturally speaking, you know, in situations like that, investors can also shorten the duration and diversify more. And I think mid-market opportunities are perfect for that, and especially mid-market opportunities for shorter duration credits, you know, like not the longer term, like 7 to 8 years, but it's, I'm talking about the 1 to 3 years or even trade finance credits. I have seen a lot of invoice financing, trade finance credits, self-liquidating assets appearing, and I think it's a perfect solution to gain exposure to private credit, to gain exposure to income, but still remain alert about potential long-term commitment to this benign cycle, stage of the cycle.
What we've seen is a lot of investors are in, you know, what's called pure play direct lending, which is what Deerpath does. And a lot of them are diversifying now their direct lending portfolio and going into what I would consider more esoteric strategies. So we see like for instance, I was on a panel the other week with someone who's only focused on the mining and metal space. So we see a bit of that as well, some asset-based finance managers going and raising capital as well as investors kind of diversify beyond just cash flow-based direct lending into some asset-based as well. So I've seen that trend certainly happen, but speaking to most investors, they're using it as a diversifier to pure play cash flow-based lending.
Yeah, I completely agree. I have maybe one thing to add. I think this is the time when you can really actually distinguish yourself as a manager. And you can distinguish yourself the way how you originate and the focus you originate. You can distinguish yourself via good underwriting standards and create all weather portfolios. You can distinguish yourself by technology, service to investors and clients, and also the impact you create and ESG you create, the environmental and social impact you create. And this is probably the trend more dominant in Europe, what I can observe, that but clearly I see many strategies appearing with clear focus on impact investing, and I see a huge upside potential also for managers developing more focused strategies on ESG.
Yeah, that's a really, really good point, and we've seen that as well, and actually we've seen it in particular coming from our European investors, the importance of ESG, which kind of really, the effort started a lot in Europe and then now has kind of infiltrated the U.S. So you see a lot more managers being a lot more cognizant about the industries that they're investing in. But then you also see investors that are, or managers that are becoming more specialized in doing impact-only funds as well. So that's a really, really good point that kind of started in Europe and is coming over here as well in the U.S.
Thank you so much, Antonella and Gabriella. Well, since you mentioned the terms investors' appetite, some investors don't obviously need instant monetization and they're able to hold a very long-term liabilities. As a private debt investor, yes, you do accept to trade in a lower level of liquidity, and there are a number of advantages to this which we discussed just now. The absolute return is higher than on the public debt markets, which we also have discussed just now. What are the preferred terms for investors? Would you say between 2 to 6 years? Obviously, a longer investment horizon would appeal only to public pension plans and insurance companies to match sort of their side of liabilities. Gabriella, you mentioned sort of 1 to 3 years, but do you think, you know, 2 to 6 years is sort of the middle ground?
I think, to be honest, this is the most difficult question to answer, because pension funds, family offices, insurance companies have very different appetite and also very different considerations. And it's not only about duration and return, but also about complexity and other ESG considerations, reporting requirements, and how comfortable the investor is feeling with the manager, with the GPs. So this is duration, obviously, if you have a long-term duration like insurance companies or pension funds, obviously it's more suited to infrastructure assets or longer-term duration assets. So there is a more natural match, which is not applicable for private wealth managers and family offices. But I think this creates a lot of opportunities, for example, with cooperation possibilities between banks and insurance companies, where banks have a very strong, at least in Europe, very strong origination capacity with regard to certain assets like infrastructure debt, CRE still, and they team up with insurance companies or pension funds that provide the long-term debt. Meanwhile, origination is still being done by banks. So we have a very different structure in Europe where banks are still dominating the market in these assets. And this sort of collaboration agreement partnerships are a lot more common in Europe than I see in the US.
I would say on the U.S. side, talking about the actual loans that we're issuing, those are typically five-year loans to companies. And then as far as our commingled funds, we have shorter duration funds for our unlevered funds that will be more around 6 years. But then we also have our typical fund is an eight-year fund. So they're pretty long-term investing funds. It's our opinion that we could achieve a higher return when we have a longer time to invest and also reinvest, because we'll enhance our return during the reinvestment period when we issue new loans and we get new sets of origination fees. And if we could keep the portfolio fully invested, earning interest on all of these great number of loans, it'll be better for investors. But again, bring up the differences between investors who want more liquidity. And think, again, as I mentioned before, this BDC market is certainly growing. There you could offer a 2 to 3 year drawdown and then some sort of liquidity starting around year three. And again, you could structure them differently, but these are the ones that's the terms that we've seen most frequently used is kind of more of a three-year term. But again, it would have to be that open-ended structure.
And have you seen an increased level of repeat business, especially those who obviously provide the funding to grow and expand further through the sort of, you know, acquisitions?
We definitely see that for sure. I think for our funds in particular, we now are working on realizing our first two funds that are more 2008 and 2011 vintage, because otherwise you'll have investors that are kind of over allocated to you as a manager if they can't get out of the earlier investments. But I think just more generally speaking, especially with large institutional investors, a lot of pension funds here, Europe, everywhere that need steady income, they're building a larger private credit portfolio and for the first time really bucketing that separately than their private equity bucket. Because the problem was when this asset class first came out, it was a liquid and investors didn't know where to put it. So they said, okay, we'll put it with private equity. But the problem is that the risk return profile is so different. So as this asset class has grown in popularity, investors have kind of gotten smarter about where they bucket this asset class. And now for many, especially pension investors, it's kind of like separate private credit is a separate bucket for them.
Yeah, I completely agree that it has been a massive change and a massive learning curve. You know, I started talking to investors more than a decade ago, and that time only leveraged finance was the only sort of investable at class in CLO format and afterwards in unlevered format. And the variety of solutions that emerged, number of managers that emerged, and the larger funds that emerged is really impressive. This change has also been reflected in the setup of LPs and their understanding of private debt as an asset class. What I see is, at least in Europe, is a very clear bifurcation on the market. So we have, let's say, 400 managers, and what I see is around 300. So three quarter is really struggling to raise their first funds, though they have very good strategies. They have very good underlying investment rationale. They have difficulties to receive allocations. So the entry barriers are very high. And on the other hand, we have the large mega funds, those who had the first mover advantage, like RS, ICG, and I can go on and on. They started with a 300 million fund, and the latest fund had been a multi-billion, let's say 4-5 billion fund in terms of size. And the LPs are really having a fight to get their allocation. You know, so it's a very strange dynamics where the LPs really seem to be happy and stick to their existing relationship and recommit to new funds.
Sure. Thank you so much for your comprehensive summary. To conclude part one, there is a significant appetite for private debt. Institutional investors are setting aside a large pot of capital for private debt across various strategies and capital seniorities. Private debt is an excellent way to diversify portfolio. It allows them access to a broad range of issuers and has a better risk profile than public debt. The lower middle market has proven to generate alpha returns for investors as it's more fragmented than upper middle market. The upper middle market is more competitive. Overall, private debt managers are enjoying unprecedented levels of positive sentiment and increasing capital allocation in private debt funds as the key segment that is generating income. Both respondents have identified and agreed that ESG is a new market trend within the private debt markets. It originated in Europe and the trend has transitioned to the US. ESG factors are now playing an important role in decision-making process. Investors are looking for funds that have ESG policies in place. Existing fund managers are now deploying ESG strategies in order to stand out and to attract investment. In the next week's episode, we will discuss the macro outlook, where we are in the economic cycle, and we will compare and discuss investor appetite for distressed private debt funds, collateralized loan obligations, leveraged loans, and unitranche, among other factors that measure the success and performance of the private debt industry.